This is Dos Pequeños,
a funnier look at the paranormal in New Mexico.
With your co-hosts, Eric Carter-Landin
and Alex.
What's up, Alex?
Hi, Eric.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I feel like I'm living in color right now because we are recording ourselves on video, which is really weird.
It really is. I'm having a hard time not thinking about that.
What do I do with my hands? So we are going to try something different. We're going to try and do some YouTube stuff. So what's up, YouTube? It's your boys, Eric and Alex, co-ghost extraordinaires, here to entertain you, maybe, probably annoy you.
More than anything.
Definitely verbally abuse you.
Yeah. That'll come from him.
we're venturing out into the world of having faces in front of people.
That's weird.
Instead of being in their ear holes, now we're in their eye holes and their ear holes.
I'm glad you guys can't smell them.
It's a small space here, the studio. It's a small space. True Consequences Productions, if you've ever wondered what it looks like, this is it.
You can see a couple of corners.
Yeah, that's all, though. You can't see very much. So, October, dude, spooky season. We're here. We're doing it.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's sweater weather.
Almost. Well, it is in the morning.
Dude, I made green chili chicken stew this afternoon for dinner. It was so good.
Campbell's?
No, dude, I made it myself. With Socorro chili, because that's the best chili.
I can't say anything about it because I don't know if I've had Socorro chili before.
If you've ever had Limitar chili or Polvadera chili or San Antonio chili, that's all Socorro chili.
I usually just get it from the farmer's market here in Berkeley. Mm. You know what I mean?
Well, I'll give you some of mine.
Yeah, let me try it.
You'll like it. It's good. I'm wearing my Ghostbusters shirt today for spooky season. I'm happy.
So you're like no strong ghosts? Is that what that is?
No, this is the... Yeah, I guess so. I don't know.
I'm only scared of strong ghosts.
Oh, don't sue us.
Please.
Sony. Whoever it is.
Whoever owns that.
Yeah.
Bill Murray. I can't see him doing that, but you never know.
No, he probably doesn't own it.
No. He's picked out a piece.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg?
No, I think it's... No, because it's like a dad and son now that are doing the whole franchise.
Ivan Reitman?
Yes, the creator.
There we go.
Yeah.
It took me a second.
The creator. That sounded very culty. I got there.
They call us the creators. Do you remember our little... little cult we were trying to start?
Yeah, Rompers and Crocs.
It never really picked up.
Moose knuckles and mullets.
And, you know, I had to wear that outfit for like at least a week and a half before I was like, it's not going
to
catch
on. No, nobody wanted to.
No one wanted
to. I didn't want to.
I didn't really want to.
So we're rambling because we are nervous, obviously, being on camera, right? That's okay. We're here. If you're on the podcast, you can actually go to YouTube and watch the video if you want. But don't.
Yeah, don't.
Don't. It'll ruin the mystery, and you'll be very disappointed. Yeah. It's like they say, don't meet your heroes, right?
No, we're no one's hero.
All right. So
we have to talk about. I'm sure we have stuff to talk
about. Well, we have to say thank you to our patrons. But thank you for being patrons. It helps us to keep the lights on in this place and
do things like this.
Do things like this now. Yeah.
Wait, where's...
What do I do with my hands?
And this is hard because if you listened to the last episode, you heard me talk about like I always talking with my hands.
Yeah.
And so now I'm like very conscious of it, and I try like just put them down to your side. Don't look that way.
Well, I do the same thing. I'm very expressive with my hands as well, so I understand that.
Right.
I understand. Right. I'm also a spaz and a klutz, so like for me, I just constantly hit this stupid mic arm.
Oh, you'll see that happening. You'll hear us put things down on the table, maybe too loudly.
Yeah. We're professionals.
See each other, stare at each other with hate in our eyes.
You act like I'm so mean to you. I'm not that mean to you. All right, so go to patreon.com/dospequeños if you want to support the show financially. You can also go to ko-fi/dospequeños. Or, you know, if you don't have money, that's okay. We understand. That's fine. you could leave us a review.
Yeah.
You could tell a friend about us.
Yeah.
You know, I think we are the most underrated podcast about paranormal stuff.
And the most humble.
And the most gracious. Yeah. And the best looking.
And the best looking. And the best sounding.
And the best sounding, yeah. Cool. So it's your turn, I think, right?
It's my turn.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit. I'm excited.
This is going to be good for October, I believe. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
And, all right, let's just get into
it. Let's get into it.
All I can say is the power of Christ compels you.
Ooh.
Okay.
Okay.
Any clues so far? I mean, maybe some.
Is it The Exorcist?
No, no. Okay. one moment while I light my sage and make a sign of a cross and sprinkle some holy water around the room.
Okay.
No. Let's smoke the sage, turn the cross upside down, and make a whiskey and holy water, because this, Eric, is going to require a drink or two, or possibly a little shouting at the old devil. So there's that. Awkward silence.
I mean, if you're trying to be vague, you're winning.
I'm getting there, right? Okay. Have you ever just been in what you define as a fever dream? Locked in a room with no escape? Have you ever shouted to a horror movie actor, actress on the movie screen, don't run up the stairs? Where the fuck are you going to go from there?
Yeah.
Well, that is like quite literally how this story feels.
Oh.
Okay. So do you know Ghostbusters?
I do.
Well, it has nothing to do with that.
Oh.
Okay. But we know that they're not real, right? Well, I mean, you know.
They're real in my heart.
Did you ever watch the last one? I haven't.
Yeah. There was so much hate for them.
I haven't seen it. I don't know where to watch it or any.
So I liked it. Yeah. But I love Leslie Jones. Love her.
Yeah.
Kate McKinnon. I love Kate McKinnon.
Kate McKinnon's in it. Who else is in it?
What's that chick's name?
Kristen Wiig.
Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy.
Okay.
And I want to say Liam...
Nielsen.
Hemsworth. Liam Hemsworth, isn't it?
Well, if you're not going to be able to call the Ghostbusters, because we're not really able to do so, maybe we should call somebody else. So who could we think of to give a call?
Jackie.
Oh, maybe potentially.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. If she's busy.
Yeah.
I would call Ed and Lorraine.
Yes. Yes.
Now that's some legit ghost demon spirit possession hunting, right?
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about this.
It's okay.
You guys, it's spooky season and we're talking about the Warrens. Like, doesn't get much better than that.
I'm curious if most of our listeners probably know about them.
Oh, yeah. And if you don't, you should totally look it up.
Yeah.
Watch the Conjuring movies.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. And this, if you really are a huge fan of them, you might want to not listen to this episode.
Oh, dude.
Because you know how I come at things.
No, man. No, it's fine.
I come at things, you know, at a realistic point of view.
Okay.
And a skeptical point of view.
Yeah.
We're going to look at both sides as much as we can.
Okay. Okay?
I'm going to try to show you, like, try to be unbiased. I'm really going to try.
Oh, God.
That's going to be difficult for me to do.
Okay.
I got to do those short takes to the camera.
Finger guns.
Yay.
Guy.
So,
or lady.
Lady, people.
Folks.
Y'all.
All right.
Ed and Lorraine Warren have been a topic of discussion for over 50 years. They have not only been a topic of discussion, they have been argued about, researched, investigated, narrated, filmed, and immortalized by pop culture. Mm-hmm. Inspiring the main characters of the Conjuring series, their stories and lives have been the sources for over 7 movies, TV shows, and documentaries, and I'm sure there are a smattering of songs and artwork and poetry written about them as well. I mean, their best artwork is fictional.
There also is some erotic fan fiction.
With the Warrens?
Written by somebody named Eric Carter Landine.
Oh, ECL?
Yeah.
I think I've seen that around. So, you know.
But like Lorraine's all buff.
And there's for some reason the centaur there.
Yeah, like, the nun is there the whole time. I don't know why.
Just in the corner going.
Testicles.
I mean, the Conjuring series alone has surpassed over $2 billion at the global box office. And so there has to be some truth to this couple.
Yeah.
Their horrifying adventures and all of their air quotes, evidence that they air quotes have. I guess I could actually do them.
You now. Could do that now that you're on
I
video.
Can, oh, yeah. Air quotes. So let's kind of Tarantino into this.
Ooh.
We're going to get.
Where's my sword?
Sword?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess Kill Bill, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. I think of Pulp Fiction automatically. Oh. So let's Tarantino this. We're getting way ahead of ourselves talking about movies. We need to take it back a little bit. So let's go back to the late 20s when Ed and Lorraine were born.
Oh.
Play like some 1920s
music. We've got a finger wave. I've got a finger wave for some reason. Right? I'm wearing a flapper dress.
A flapper. You're, yes.
Yeah.
Big old set of pearls. And
the YouTube people are like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's wearing a Ghostbusters t-shirt and a baseball hat. Like, calm down. But the podcast people don't know.
They don't know.
You don't know.
And it's probably better you don't.
Yeah. The end.
Ed Warren Miney was born September 7th, 1926, and Lorraine Rita Warren was born January 21st, 1927, in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Bridgeport is a historic seaport city, and there's some interesting history about Bridgeport. And in the summer of 1915, 11 years before Ed's birth, a series of strikes led to the 8-hour day at the town's factories.
Mm.
This was so successful, the 8-hour day spread throughout the entire Northeast. So I don't know how grateful I am for that, but I'm sure glad it's not 12 hours.
I'm just saying, why 16? Couldn't it have been a 2.5-hour work day?
You know? make it like, well, I don't know, maybe just more like hour breaks throughout the day.
No, I think I would like to be off by like 12.
If I could be done by 10:30, that would be 9:45. 9:45. If I could just get up, brush my teeth, and go back to bed.
That'd be the best.
That'd be really where I'm at now.
That's kind of what I'm looking for in employment. So if you know anyone.
And pay me an obscene amount of
like
money.
250, 300.
We'll talk six figures.
Yeah, you know. Well, definitely six figures. It's just...
The First World War continued the expansion of the city, and before the Great Depression, there were over 500 factories in the city. In fact, Columbia Records' main pressing plant was located in Bridgeport.
Oh.
Despite the Depression, the build-up to World War II helped lead them to recovery by the late 1930s.
Okay.
So just the build-up, the foreplay of war, got them there.
So hot.
Of course, I took a look at education, because why not? In September 1978, Bridgeport teachers participated in a 19-day long strike because of contract negotiations. The government, in their infinite wisdom, chose to approve a court order and state law that made strikes by public workers illegal in the state.
Oh, Jesus.
Because you don't want them having a voice. And because of this, 274 teachers were arrested and jailed like they should have been.
Jesus.
No, I'm kidding.
Alex's views do not reflect the views of Dos Pequeños or True Consequences Productions.
Something else that was absolutely fascinating about Bridgeport, what it was the home to P.T. Barnum, you know? Have you heard of
Barnum
him?
And Bailey Circus?
Yeah, known as the most successful people in showbiz, and he gave people what they wanted.
Spirit fingers.
And it led them to believe in incredible and unbelievable things and made a lot of money while doing it. There was something in the water when he served as the town mayor in the late 19th century. Could also have something to do with the fact that Barnum housed his circus in the town in the winter in his four houses that he had built. So he had four houses. So
he must have had
some bank back then. Yeah.
He had at least $14,000.
At least. I mean.
But maybe more than that.
17. Time,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Could be 17.
How much was it to get in the circus back then? Like.
It was a buffalo nickel.
Sixpence.
How many pubes would it take for me to get a ticket?
Oh, pubes.
That'll be 37 pubes, please.
Oh, Jesus. If you know anything about the Warrens, that's going to be interesting to you, okay? Right. And quite the coincidence, or...
Is it? Dun, dun,
dun. We didn't have to do the music. But if you don't know anything about the Warrens at all by this point, you will at the end of this episode, okay. And you are for sure going to notice some tie-ins there.
I'm just going to say this. Our listeners, and now our viewers... they know who the Warrens are.
Yeah, I think most of them would.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you don't, there's ways of you to find out.
Yeah, they're like back in the day Dildo Baggins, but less dildo-y.
So there isn't a ton about their early, early life. And from what we do know, though, Lorraine attended a Catholic girls' school in Milford, Connecticut, about 9 miles northeast. Ed Warren served in the United States Navy, enlisting at the age of 17 during World War II. Mm-hmm. So prior to enlisting in the Navy, Ed was an usher at the Colonial Theater. And at the age of 16, it would just so happen that Lorraine and her mother were regulars at the theater. Hmm. And chances are, in 1943, they were attending to watch This Is the Army, For Whom the Bell Tolls, or even Casablanca.
Okay.
And something happened because Ed befriended Lorraine, and they began dating. I guess he offered her a little more than popcorn, if you...
Oh, the old penis and the popcorn trick, huh? Womp, 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 womp. Oh, what's this? Oh, I guess it's already there in my hand. I might as well.
Do people fucking do that shit?
I think sexual predators do that.
Yeah, like weird. I mean, maybe food...
That's a little creepy.
I don't know.
It's a lot creepy.
In 1945, Ed would be deployed for 4 months before his ship was sunk in the North Atlantic. After a ship was sunk, he headed stateside on what is called the 30-day or survivor's leave. Mm. They only give them 30 days if they survive something.
Like, figure that shit
out.
You
get a month, man.
Get it together.
Now back to work.
Get back on a boat.
Yeah. Well, he was at home for those 30 days. He married Lorraine. And after Ed and Lorraine were wed, Ed went back to serve in the Navy. And around 1951, he finished his time and came home. Ed and Lorraine did what any good Northeastern Catholic family would do and have a kid. Hmm. And her name was Judy.
Oh, Judy.
Now, here's the thing. Ed had just come back from the Navy, and he was already married. And they decided it was time to have a kid. Mm-hmm. And, well, it would only make sense that Ed would go back to school and further his education and get a good-paying job. No, that can't be right. Who the hell wrote this script? He went to art school, huh?
Oh, yeah.
And Ed enrolled in Yale's art seminary called the Perry Art School. So that was by our script writer. Thank you, JT. he threw himself in there. I'm going to let you guess what the subjects of his majority of his paintings were.
I'm going to guess...
excuse me.
That it was... He was an aspiring manga artist.
Octopus Demon Dicks.
Am I close?
Yeah. I'm impressed.
Thanks.
He knows his art.
I do.
He knows his art.
Or was it flowers that look like vaginas?
Very Southwest. Mm. Of course, it was like haunted houses. Haunted houses, right? Because that's what people draw and paint.
Okay, but...
But why not, right?
Well, okay, but here's the thing. What kind of haunted houses are we talking about? Like, are we talking about, like, carnival haunted houses? With, like, the movie side-to-side treadmill situation?
Ooh, yeah.
Like that?
Little spinning tunnel thing?
Yeah.
No.
Or are we talking about, like, Victorian mansions with spooky backgrounds?
And see, this is when we... Like these.
Yeah. Like this.
Well, I guess if there was a Hallmark around, he could sell them for a bunch of older ladies who wanted a few Halloween decorations to put out for 3 weeks and then put them back in the attic. Okay?
But, I mean, geez, you don't have to get so aggressive about it.
Was I?
Calm down.
In the attic!
In the attic!
Well, there wasn't much of a surprise that Ed focused on haunted houses because he was kind of into the, you know, that was his kink, perhaps, you know?
I mean, don't kink shame, man.
No. I'm not going to yuck your yum. I think I've said that before.
Mm-hmm.
In multiple sources, it does speak to one more piece of Ed's young life. Whether this was reported by Ed and was nothing but a child's story, or was reported by others around Ed from the ages of 5 to 12. He lived in a house that was apparently haunted. And it was during that time that he experienced his first supernatural events. I kind of remembered. Did I use them correctly? No. Not really. Now, Ed said, and I do quote this, "My father, who was a police officer at the time, would often say, 'Ed, there's a logical reason for everything that happens in this house.' Mm-hmm. But he never came up with that logical reason." Keep in mind, this was spoken by Ed for an interview on his own website. I guess he had a website.
Was he at CompuServe.net?
AOL. It's
probably AOL. Netscape.
Net Zero, even. So it was like believing in that. What was the?
I got another random one.
What?
GeoCities.
Is that what like VPNs are going to be now? It's like, like we're going to look back on VPNs and be like, Jesus.
Yeah,
can't believe we had to use that. Oh, fuck. So I digress. During this time that in that house, the family allegedly heard pounding, rapping, and footsteps.
Yeah.
I'm not sure in that order. Hit it. For some reason, I feel like those are all things that would be great heard in a house from the 1920s to 1930s, especially with kids. You would hear those things.
If this Victorian house is a rockin'. Don't come a knocking.
Do not come a knocking.
Do not hearken upon my home.
I mean, do you ever go to your grandparents' house and realize late at night that it's not as easy as you thought to get to that cookie jar because every single floorboard is going crazy?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Did you have a cookie jar still?
Is that a thing? Well, in the 80s we did, yeah.
I remember the cookies in there would be like break your tooth style.
Yeah, or you take a bite and like the whole house can hear you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, okay. Yeah. So why do you ask? Let me explain what I'm talking.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, Jesus, sorry.
You wake up and you feel a tad peckish.
Okay.
Grandma gave you two cookies before. I wake up every day and feel a tad peckish.
Dude, I'm always hungry, yeah.
And said that's all you got. You only get two cookies.
It's not enough,
two
Grandma.
Two fucking cookies.
Grandma.
Go
That's
to
not
bed.
Enough. Grandma.
But she's asleep and everyone else is asleep, so let's take risks.
Okay.
You know. What kind of
cookies are we talking about?
For grandma, they were probably something like
Snickerdoodle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
Maybe an old Chips Ahoy.
You know? Or some fucked up oatmeal raisin bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That you'd lose a tooth on.
I'd be so mad.
You know exactly where the jar is. You could get there with your eyes closed, which is good because it's pitch black. And you get out of your bed and reach the door easy enough.
Mm-hmm.
Take one step out of the door, silence, false sense of security.
Right.
Because the next few steps make creaks that could wake the dead, you know, right down the hallway. And so what do? Grandma light turns on and you hightail it back to bed, jump in it and pull the covers over your head and hold your breath.
Mm-hmm.
Point is, creaking, rapping, footsteps are all pretty standard in an old house, especially one from the 1920s and 30s. As if that wasn't enough, Ed Warren continued his description of what was going on. And in that old house, he would say, quote, "My family would all go to bed around just 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Many times I would hear the closet door beginning to open up. And at first, I'd look into that closet and only see a shapeless darkness. And then slowly, I would start to see light beginning to form. And it would morph into these, like, ball shape, sort of like a basketball. And then I'd begin to see a face in that ball." End quote. Ed also added, "like a cherry on top of a sundae, and that was the face of an old woman."
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I'm not going to enjoy this episode, I've decided.
You're welcome. Here's the thing.
Alex ruins everything.
Here's the thing. Eyeballs do some crazy things in the dark. Okay? Okay. Psychologist Donald Heap provided a research study that dealt with the sensory isolation. I know what you're thinking. He was a kid in the house. And in the study titled Project X-38, Heap recruited volunteers. He paid $20 a day to lie in a 4x6x8 foot soundproof cell, subjected to perpetual isolation and perceptual isolation. And that it was told to stay in the cells as long as they could. Now, after a few hours in isolation, nearly all subjects saw that and felt that they weren't really there. That's why a lot of people do the sensory deprivation tanks.
You know? I want to try that.
I do too. I've never done that.
Looks cool.
First, they would see pulsing dots in simple geometric patterns, and these grew into complex, isolated images floating around the room.
The mind is a crazy thing.
Which then evolved into elaborate integrated scenes playing out before the subject's eyes, dreaming basically while awake, as one participant described it.
IRL, as the kids like to say.
IRL. One participant reported seeing a parade of squirrels marching purposely across a snowy field, wearing little baby snowshoes
and backpacks. I want to see that so bad.
While another one saw a bathtub being steered by an old man. And a metal helmet.
A bathtub being
steered by an old man in a metal helmet. And out of all creative things Ed could have seen, he saw an orb of light with a face in it.
God, he's a fucking orber.
And all I can say is creativity fail. Like, right? With all these amazing things that were happening, squirrels with snowshoes and backpacks. Yeah,
old men and bathtubs steering and around.
He's like, I saw an orb with a face.
Wilson!
All that to say from the get-go, okay? Ed was fascinated by haunted houses, okay? So right. That makes sense. It's starting to come together.
Yeah.
2 years after starting art school, Ed and Lorraine hit the road. And in 1952, they set up a pop-up stands throughout tourist areas in Massachusetts and Vermont, Rhode Island, coastal Connecticut, and to sell his paintings of spooky houses. It is important to remember that Lorraine was a skeptic at this point.
Oh.
And rightfully so. If Ed's only selling point on this whole haunted thing was that when he was a kid, he saw a light in his house, I'd be pretty skeptical as well. But doggone it, she was going to support him through his art endeavors.
Do you think what he saw in his house was a glowworm?
One of those old toys? Mm-hmm. Potentially. I mean, no, that was way, but they didn't come out with that till like the 60s or something.
I love my glowworm.
You still have one?
I do.
That's adorable. And she supported him and, but she kind of just wanted to eat too. So selling, paintings was probably the best way to go about that. And well, it seemed that Ed ended up being preoccupied with haunted houses along the way, before they were renowned for their activities. Ed had somewhat a difficult time getting into people's homes. That sounded weird. It's a little tough to knock on the door and say, "Hi, I'm Ed. You don't know me, and this is my wife, Lorraine.
Look at my spooky pictures."
Yeah, you don't know her either, but we hear your house is haunted. Can we come inside and investigate your entire life? And so Ed would cart Lorraine around whenever he heard of a home whose owners claimed it was haunted.
Oh.
Quote, "We were just kids. Nobody was just going to let us in, and we were curiosity seekers," end quote. So the grift began with the purpose of getting inside of the house. Did I say grift?
You said grift.
Ooh. Okay, first you got to get in their house.
Okay.
And then he started sketching the home. Quote, "I would do a really nice sketch of the house with ghosts coming out of it, and I'd give it to Lorraine. She'd go knock on the door, and with her Irish personality, she'd say, 'Oh, my husband loves to sketch and paint haunted houses, and he made this.'" Now you can see how it's kind of called a grift, right?
Yeah.
Apparently that worked. I'm not sure why. I assume that it was a product of the times, potentially. If someone came to me and said they sketched my house or they were across the street sketching it, I'd probably be on the phone with someone with my tax dollars that pay for them.
Right, like police?
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess he got enough evidence during his art escapades, because later that year, he and Lorraine, still a skeptic, however, started the New England Center for Psychic Research, otherwise known as NESPR.
Good old NESPR.
The primary goal of the center's creation was really like original, investigate hauntings.
Tree 99.
Right? Okay. I think I remember in one of the what are their movies called? Conjurings. Mm-hmm. He was painting the nun, right?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Okay, not much happened really between 1952 and 1965. Around that time, the Warrens went into the home where the spirit was of a little girl named Cynthia that was speaking through a medium. Mm-hmm. And she said that she was looking for her mother. The Warrens expanded the mission of their center to help earthbound spirits move on. So they expanded their focus. I guess haunted houses just weren't cutting it any longer. It was around that time that the Warrens said their center's work was based on two things: religion and science.
Hot.
Because that...
Those are my two favorite things.
That makes sense. Religion and science. They go right...
Religion on science action.
Yeah.
Still hot.
Okay, so real quick, let me address the definition of science here.
Oh, science.
Science.
Alex and Eric know absolutely nothing. Alex's views do not represent the views of Das Spook Quenos or True Consequences or True Consequences Productions or anyone else for that matter. Seriously, who thinks like this? What the actual fuck is wrong with the two of you? Any advice given by these two should be taken with a grain of salt and should definitely not be implemented in your life unless you like to suffer. Seriously, these two are idiots. Why would you listen to them? Alex and Eric are not to be trusted.
When I say loose, I mean loose, okay? There's very little science, proof, and evidence, okay? At the end of this, I'll summarize the group's findings when it came to the evidence of the Warrens had.
Okay.
The thing that happened between 1952 and 1965 was that Ed and Lorraine added a few superlatives to their career. Ed became a self-taught and self-professed demonologist.
Fuck yes.
And Lorraine overcame near skepticism and professed to be clairvoyant and the light trance medium. It's amazing how that kind of worked out, isn't it?
Hmm. Trance. I like a medium trance.
Oh, I'm a deep.
You're a deep trance? Yeah. Are you drums and bass?
Basically.
Yeah, I like the drums and bass.
D&B, as the kids say. Yeah.
Well,
right?
not kids now.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyway.
We're old.
Let's talk about demonology and clairvoyance, okay, and mediumship. Let's talk about demonology, clairvoyance, and mediumship. Okay, we've been in the weeds with this Warrens. I think it's time to get my neighbor never does their lawn until the lawnmower stalls over and over again. Weeds. Demonology is non-scientific. Okay, let's get that out right away. It's not at all. It's the study of demons or beliefs about demons. Okay, demons may be non-human. Separable souls, or a disincarnate spirits which never inhabit a body. Sometimes societies believe that all pieces of the universe are supposedly under control of spirits, each ruling a certain element or object, and in turn, those spirits are subject to even greater spirits. Mm. Which, what's crazy, in a multiple culture, it seems to deem spirits as benevolent or neutral. And in this case, how do we get where we are? Demonology has pieces in Buddhism, Islam, Hinduism, Christianity, and more. And it's a little hard to believe that Ed Warren was like a self-taught demonologist.
Yeah.
And after just a few years, that's something that I would think would take a little bit longer. Especially when it's, scientific at all. Like, he's a doctor in demonology. And then again, maybe it would be easy to become a demonologist. I haven't looked into it.
It's probably just like becoming a minister on the internet.
Watch. Look. Dude, let's Eric, become... There's a demon in you. Let me get it out unless, you know, you want it there.
Let's become demonologists.
Okay. Is Zach Baggins a demonologist?
He's a demon yeller.
What did he say in that last meme that
you put up there? Oh, eat my ass, ghost.
Eat my ass, ghost. I don't judge. Remember when I said that Lorraine Warren was a skeptic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even after they opened up the NESPR, how the tides have turned. Eventually, right? I guess.
She saw the money.
Yeah. All of a sudden, Lorraine was a self-professed clairvoyant and light trance medium. And before I get into those things, let me just say this. It took me far longer to read about clairvoyance and light trance mediumship than it did for Lorraine to change her mind and determine that she could all of a sudden feel disturbances in the force.
Mm-hmm.
Now, clairvoyance is the claimed ability, not proven ability, that... gain to be able to gain information about an object, person, location, or physical event through extrasensory perception.
I'm picking something up right now from the universe for you, Alex.
But, I don't want to hear it.
Okay, let's see here. There's a woman, or maybe a man. Could also be a kid or a dog.
Ah, it's a dog. I knew a dog.
Yeah, and his name, her name starts with a
Bill. Rosie.
Rosie! I knew it. Okay. Rosie said, fuck you, Alex.
Oh, missed that pub. Okay, so it was the first credited to Marquis de Fezeguer in 1784 and was reported the ability throughout the late 19th to early 20th centuries.
But that must have been easy back then to do that.
Oh,
to like
that
spook
easy.
People
if
out.
You were like the first people to kind of like pull those.
Yeah, you're off. Like.
Yeah.
Marilyn said, fuck off.
That she liked your cooking.
And you owe her 75 pence.
Now pay up.
Bitch. Bitch better have my money.
None of this has been supported by scientific evidence at all. Even if you want to say clairvoyance is, you know, a real science, it doesn't really fucking matter because science still considers it bunk. And this skill allows one to see into the future and sometimes maybe in the past or see something happening like outside of one's body even. And in other words, it allows one to see whatever is necessary.
I don't know.
To see whenever it is necessary to see it.
I don't know.
Is that too much? Is that too meta?
Well, I think it's, I don't know, man. It's like I have had experiences that...
I know. We've talked about it.
That I can't discount. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, like, I appreciate the skepticism towards stuff like that because I am skeptical about, like, the TV psychics and, you know, the people
that
are...
It's all about their motivation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's about motivation.
And so, but I think that they're... Like, if you look at... And I don't know a lot about this, but this is just me being a guy who has a Google box.
Yeah.
Okay. Some of the quantum physics ideas that are all theories, but they're all kind of interesting to think about. And like the idea that maybe this is a simulation, like this existence, right?
We got to do a show on that.
Yeah, we should do.
Yeah.
That would explain things like supposed clairvoyance because maybe there was like a glitch in the matrix or whatever, right? I'm not saying I believe in that, but that's just, these are just these weird theories that are out there.
Alex and Eric know absolutely nothing. Alex's views do not represent the views of Das Spook, Quinos, or True Consequences, or True Consequences Productions, or anyone else for that matter. Seriously, who thinks like this? What the actual fuck is wrong with the two of you? Any advice given by these two should be taken with a grain of salt and should definitely not be implemented in your life unless you like to suffer. Seriously, these two are idiots. Why would you listen to them? Alex and Eric are not to be trusted.
And I can't explain my own weird stuff that happens like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So
maybe there is something more to it. But that, we haven't. What science is though is that we have to have
proof. Yeah, no, I get that.
It's the proof of it.
I get that.
And a proof, you know, it has to be. There's, you know.
Well, and it's hard to prove that somebody had a dream or a vision. You can't see that.
Yeah.
So you don't even know
if, you're the
like,
only
if they're
one
being
experiencing
honest,
it,
right?
How are you going to ever know? That's why there's no science that backs it.
No, 100%. But
right?
Now, having said all that. Like, I definitely believe that there are some people that are more sensitive than others and that have access to different forms of information for one reason or another. I don't know why. I believe that. I definitely fucking believe that the Warrens were full of shit now.
Okay.
Well. Because, well, I think it's probably partially the way you're telling the story, right?
Uh-huh.
Which I get is on purpose because that's who you are. You're that person.
Right.
But... still, like, I don't know. I don't trust it.
Well, let give me more time. I don't know. Maybe I can.
You think you're going to convince me the other way?
I kind of think I will.
Oh, fuck. Okay. All right. Let's do it.
Here's the thing about clairvoyance. Okay. There have been multiple studies done with self-proclaimed clairvoyance. Aline Jeanette Vancho Liet Garrett. Yes, all those names were some of the Irish mediums and parapsychologists who were tested out by the Ryan at Duke University in 1933 with the use of Zindar cards, which contain a series of symbols, right? You've seen it where they use the symbols and everything. It shouldn't have been very difficult. Now, these sealed cards were in an envelope, and she was asked to guess the contents. And it wouldn't be that hard for a clairvoyant to do this. However, her correct guesses, over 12,000 guesses failed to produce any solid results past chance level. Okay, that was one person, I get it. In short, she performed horribly. She criticized the test later by claiming that the cards lacked a psychic energy called energy stimulus. But in short, it has been proven time and time again that clairvoyance is not something to be really trusted. Okay? Just not. And now that we've hit on that, let's discuss the light trance mediumship. What is that? Well, mediumship has quite a history on it. It is the ability to mediate communication between spirits of the dead and the living on Earth, which just makes it sound like it's really like kind of a show with Judge Judy and some ghosts who are pissed at humans for living in their house.
Dude, I would totally watch Ghost Jerry Springer.
Ooh, can you imagine?
That would be amazing.
And chairs just like magically fly up and hit you in the head.
We should make a Ghost Jerry Springer shirt.
It's not a bad idea. In either case, there was a lack of objective evidence. An experiment done by the British Psychologist Society found absolutely no medium ability within its subjects. Mediumship actually started as a game, pretty much. Ye old Ouija boards were used by upper class people as a source of entertainment, and this
look how fancy I am with my Ouija board.
I'm talking to the dead.
I've got a top hat and a monocle.
This then spread to grifters and tricksters, though.
My favorite kind of people.
They would use the tricks that magicians used on stage. And at this point, mediumship began to lose its credibility. primarily popular in the United States and the United Kingdom because, of course, it was modern spiritualism branched from practices and lectures of the Fox Sisters in New York State in about 1848. All I could think of was, well, here's another fox that is full of shit. If mediumship was simply that and only that, it probably would have died with the debunking over the time, right? But the issue is, as always, religion was tied into it. Mm-hmm. Spiritualism continued on despite the fraudulent practices, and while physical mediumship and seances fell out of popularity, platform mediumship came to the forefront. Now, what Lorraine was, and I use that term loosely, was a light trance medium. Trance mediumship involves the individual remaining conscious during a period of communication where a spirit basically takes over the medium's mind in order to speak with the living. So basically, Lorraine was just a light trance medium and kind of like the Diet Coke of mediums, you know, or Mr.
Clear Pepsi.
Yeah. Crystal Pepsi.
The Crystal Pepsi.
Ed and Lorraine were a cliche in that they were appeared at right place in the right time. The Northeast is rife with ghost stories. And in addition to that, they really came into their own right as a satanic panic was getting started.
Fuck yeah.
Imagine that. Also imagine my happiness that I would need to look up this part of history as well.
Yeah.
Just to give kind of people the full context of their rise to ultimate power. Not really, but at least their rise. Satanic panic was primarily a United States thing because, again, of course, it was. And it was a moral panic focused over 12,000 unsubstantiated cases of satanic abuse.
Right.
While this was primarily a U.S. thing, the concept of blaming Satan, demon, or the other for the problems that came around, you know what I mean? Like, it's so much easier to blame the devil.
Oh, yeah, dude, the devil made me fucking do it.
Another one of their Warren's movies. More around the time of the Warrens, one of the most immediate openings to the U.S. satanic panic was McCarthyism in the 1950s. The isms kind of encouraged the practice of making accusations of subversion and treason. You know,
yay,
America, while it targeted communism and socialism. And it's easily transferred over to other blame game moments like Satanism and demons and satanic panic. There were a few foundational pieces of McCarthyism that truly led to the moral panic. One, there was an establishment of fundamental Christianity, which also founded a political activism called the Moral Majority. Mm. Two, there was a rise of anti-cult movement. There was an accusation that abusive cults were kidnapping and brainwashing children and teens. Boy, that sounds awfully familiar. Three, the Church of Satan appeared when... which gave just the smallest truth to the worry about satanic cults. 4. Social work and child protection was developed, but it struggled to have a child sexual abuse considered seriously. 5. Finally, PTSD, repressed memory, and the survivor movement.
Okay, so this is all what's driving satanic panic?
Yes.
Okay.
The satanic panic was truly a result of the collision of religion, faith, spirituality, politics, and moral rage towards the other. In an article called The Psychic Who Made Bank Off the Satanic Panic, written by Shannon Robson, she mentions early, quote, early pioneers in the 70s satanic panic era, a time when cults performing satanic rituals were supposedly, although without much evidence, thought to be a widespread problem. Lorraine and Ed capitalized on that trend and made a killing. Satanic panic and the hauntings and possessions that the Warrens dealt with, all conveniently located in their own New England backyard, mostly occurred in the 70s and 80s when fears of the occult and devil worship bubbled onto the national scene as never before.
Did you ever get told, like when you were a kid, that if you play records backwards, they would be like devil messages?
Yeah, I absolutely remember that. Yeah. And there was satanic panic when I was living in Colorado Springs back in the 80s. You know, real worry about things, you know, kids being took up and stuff like
yeah.
that. So as the panic took hold in the United States, Ed and Lorraine Warren were gearing up for their many well-documented experiences. Mm. And honestly, I'm not even sure what to call them. Grifts or kind of jokes or events. Nah, I don't know.
Right.
And I told you guys at the beginning of this fucking thing that if you liked the Warrens, you probably didn't want to listen to this.
Right.
So in 1968, two roommates claimed that their Raggedy Ann doll was possessed by the spirit of a girl named Annabelle Hodgins. Mm-hmm. Okay, and honestly, with the way Raggedy Ann looks, any of those dolls could have been possessed.
100%. My buddy was trying to kill me.
Oh, you had a my buddy?
I did.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm. Kid sister.
Oh, he had the kid sister
too?
No,
I had my buddy.
Oh, okay. Anyway...
Wherever I go, he goes, my buddy.
I know it's in my head now.
My buddy.
And me.
My buddy and me.
And there we go. Kid sister.
Kid sister.
Anyway, now you're singing it in your head, and you probably won't hear this next line.
Your face.
There isn't much more else to this story.
Okay.
Really, that's it for Annabelle. That's honestly the end of that
story. The end?
Possessed doll, and the Warrens took it. They told the roommates that the doll was being manipulated by an inhuman presence. Mm-hmm. And what I think happened was that Judy wanted a doll, and the Warrens just didn't sell enough of the Ed's paintings. Cue the old, we don't have enough money for our old doll, for our bratty daughter who wanted to shut her up, so we decided this dolly, when we saw it at the window, was haunted. Tale as old as time.
Oh, yeah. I just did that yesterday.
Little while later, in 1971, there was a home that the Warrens said was haunted. This home was located in Harrisville, Rhode Island. Now, admittedly, a lot of homes in Rhode Island are old and creaky and not really haunted because, you know, the family that lived there was the Perron family. Perron family?
Perron family.
Yeah. And the Warrens continued to oversell the story, saying that the house that was they lived in was haunted by a witch that had also lived there in the early 1800s. And they called this witch Bathsheba Sherman.
That's your drag name.
Here we are. And they came in the 1970s, and they kept some things specific and generic, and they also chose the correct things to do. So... one of the most famous events the Warrens investigated was the Amityville Horror House. And this is such a fascinating case, because primarily because it probably didn't even really happen. In 1975, in New York, George Cathy Lutz claimed their house was haunted by a demonic presence that was violent and drove them out of their homes. Now, this tells me that they were susceptible to suggestion regarding demons, possession, or haunting, because, well, for some, they would say, well... the obvious means that it's not just the Warren suggesting the haunted nature of the home, okay? It's because they lived there previously. Mm-hmm. See, that happened. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Here's the funny thing about the hoax, haunting. Author Stephen and Roxanne Kaplan, who wrote the Amityville Horror Conspiracy, said this entire thing was a hoax. In return, Lorraine told a newspaper reporter it wasn't by doing her best. No, it's not.
You're wrong.
Yeah. No, it's not.
Excuse me. I'm a clairvoyant and a light trans medium.
So like your best, like,
who knows better, me or you?
Your mom middle school comeback, you know?
I know you are, but what am I?
The story was absolutely refuted by eyewitnesses and more, including forensic evidence. In addition, in 1979, a lawyer by the name of William Weber said that he and the occupants of the home invented it over many bottles of wine, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. So who are you going to believe, right? The grifters, the lawyer, it's kind of a lose-lose now at this point, I'd say. And it sounded so much better in my head and... in movies.
Yeah, so you got my hopes up and then you smash them into the ground.
I do that, don't I?
You do.
In another case that was blown away by out of proportion, let's talk about the poltergeist case, the Enfield poltergeist case.
Oh, the Enfield haunting.
Mm. In 1977, 2 years after Amityville case, Ed and Lorraine were looking for a doozy, and they found one in North
any
London.
Any doozies? You got any doozies? Anybody have a doozy here?
They found it in North London suburb of Enfield. Don't we have some fans out
in the UK? Shout out.
Yeah. There were claims that a family home was haunted by a poltergeist, and many thought it was the children simply wanting attention, though. And the Warrens took these claims seriously because, again, of course they did. And they believed it was the case of demonic possession. And while the story was the inspiration for The Conjuring, critics of the Warrens say that they were involved in a far lesser extent than their stories, and their stories they inspired told them. So a parapsychologist who investigated the Enfield case said that the Warrens, quote unquote, could make a lot of money out of this case, end quote. Mm. He actually agreed with the idea that the Warrens were not even invited to the house and that, quote, nobody in the family had ever heard of him until Ed Warren had shown up.
She doesn't even go here.
End quote. He doesn't even know who I am. those are some of the big ones, okay? If you want to look further into some cases, there is a case of Arnie Johnson, the Sinecker. This is where you play the actual saying, how to say it. Sinecker House, which is just a fun thing to say anyway. It was controversial because the family who told the story couldn't keep it straight. And while working through serious problems like alcoholism and also drug addiction, okay, Eric, I was just able to find an article from the New England Skeptical Society, and I feel like this was just created just to fuck with the Warrens. However, I didn't really look into that. Okay, the article was investigated and written by Perry DeAngelis and Stephen Novella, MD, titled Hunting the Ghost Hunters. And the point of the article was to explain how they went and attempt to prove the Warrens correct by investigating their evidence and what they had said had multitude of. And what was the end result? Well, don't jump ahead of me. I'm just fucking kidding. Calm down. Look at you. You're so tense. Here's what they found, all right? Ed and Lorraine Warren hunt ghosts, apparitions, demons, possessed people, places, and things. They have been doing so for decades and claim to have looked at nearly 8,000 cases, and they are world-renowned for this practice. As a regional skeptical organization, we have taken on the task of investigating local paranormal claims. On the matter of the hauntings, right? The Warrens are one of those preeminent experts, and they are local. So naturally, we decided to look into their work. Also, they claim to have scientific evidence, which does indeed prove to the existence of ghosts, which sounds like a testable claim, into which we can sink into our investigative teeth. What we found was a very nice couple, some genuinely sincere people, but absolutely no compelling evidence. Or more precisely, there was a ton of evidence, but none of it stands up to rigorous scientific testing, and most of it was not even cursory testing. None of it. So it was found that the Warrens support anything that seems to show their assumption that the paranormal is real. I don't think that's surprising, though. We've seen that recently with people willing to accept anything in their echo chamber that supports their own beliefs, or whatever they define as beliefs. Okay, they also found that the Warrens were phenomenal storytellers and that Ed had a lot of stories. And, quote, during that first visit and in the five-hour interview that followed, we were treated to scores of Warren stories. However, despite their insistence to the contrary, stories are not evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Ed took them around to see all their stuff. And he, of course, added the disclaimer that they should let him know if they bump into anything so he could cleanse the auras before they left. And to say, okay, to that I say, what the literal fuck, right? Mm-hmm. One of the ghostly books they had in their possession was titled Unearthed Arcana, okay? And you think with a name like this, it'd be a lot of Necronomicon Ex Mortis from Evil Dead type shit. You'd be wrong. It was like Dungeons & Dragons role-playing game book. This plays into the entire we're Catholic and Christians, and we think D&D is the devil.
Mm.
Ed regaled them with rules and jargon of the trade and hoping to distract them enough to impress them, right?
He's like, look over here.
Yeah, what's this? Ah,
oh, the Barnum, hey.
The Barnum PT style. He then turned to the photographic evidence. I wish, can we put pictures here?
Yeah.
Like this.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Wow. And that.
Do you see that one?
Oh, there's that one too.
Ah. Crazy. This is the vast majority of their evidence, though. And as the investigator said, quantity is not a substitute for quality. In response to this, they explained that there was two ways of getting blobs of light, flashback, light diffraction. Okay, what it's lacking in all of them, however, is the consideration of alternative explanations of the photographs other than genuine ghosts. There was no investigation into natural sources of the blobs of light, no discussion of alternatives, no discussion at all. In fact, there is only the simple unquestioned pronouncement that such blobs of light are evidence of the paranormal.
Duh.
Of course, if photographs weren't enough, the Warrens had video evidence as well, and Ed showed them the famous Union Cemetery video of the white lady passing through.
Mm-hmm.
He showed it, but he refused to allow it to leave the home so that they could analyze it. So I guess he was worried that they would be able to, I don't know, prove that it was bullshit. They did get to take a piece of the photo evidence, and they sent it to the HB Group, a professional video company. And it turned out to be less than compelling, as it was debunked by the group.
Mm.
Of course, this was all the evidence that they could get, and the Warrens would not give them any more. They were given excuses like they had just turned off the equipment, or something had happened, and that the people in the film wanted their privacy, or the film was mysteriously erased. Even eyewitness testimony was less than provable. Memory is, you know...
It's fickle.
Yeah. And we don't know which was determined, which are true memories or manufactured memories.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something fascinating that they all discuss, which I'll, you know, kind of say for the last thing. Most of the witnesses saw something right at night in the bedroom, right? They were involved in the time and places that were connected with sleep or near sleep state.
Mm.
There is a well-described neurological phenomenon called hypnagogia. Okay.
I have that.
Let me put the word right there. This occurs when we are between the waking and sleeping states, semi-conscious, not fully aware. It is during these times that their alleged paranormal experiences manifested themselves. Many believe that they are being abducted by aliens
so it's like
from
a
their
dream
bed.
State almost.
Others that they are being visited by ghosts and during REM sleep and continuing into waking dreams. Our brains turn off the neurons that connect to our spinal column in order to keep us from acting out these dreams and resulting in a sensation of paralysis.
Mm.
Okay? So, sleep paralysis. I feel like this would be a good explanation and a good chunk of what evidence the Warrens say they have. In all, the Warrens wouldn't let investigators follow them as they investigated, and the authors found that, quote, they are concerned about protecting their organization and beliefs they represent, and would rather than the scientific search for the truth, whatever that may lead.
Mm.
Ed and Lorraine continued investigating and lecturing in classrooms, and on August 23rd, 2006, Ed passed away at his home. He was 79, and in the 5 years leading up to his death, his health had really kind of deteriorated. And this was after he had said that to have collapsed in 2001, and when he was opening the door to let his cat in. Even though they had restarted his heart, he was in a coma for 11 weeks.
Whoa.
When he asked about this, his son-in-law said that his hospital explained that Ed wouldn't last 24 hours. And he said, quote, "I know I'll be going to a beautiful place, a place so spectacular it defines words," end quote. In my opinion, for the years of grifting and lying and using satanic panic and religion to push their agenda, they should be forced to walk the earth to try and prove that the supernatural are real, only to be disproved and unbelieved by the masses.
Well, that's harsh.
Fucking dark.
Harsh.
Yeah. 13 years later, on April 19th, 2019, Lorraine Warren passed away in her sleep. She was 92 years old. So, what can one say about the Warrens? I think I know where I stand. Not often. I sit or lay down or perhaps take naps.
I like naps.
And choose between to believe the science and investigations into the Warrens rather than the Warrens themselves, right? Here's the thing. If the Warrens wanted to be believed, or they wanted to ensure that they could prove the existence of the supernatural, demons, possessions, or the like, you would think that they would want to actually circulate the legitimate evidence that they claimed they had.
No.
Why not?
Because that... they know they're fucking faking it. And so if they know, if people just barely look at it from the surface, just like with Chupacabra and everything else that we've looked at, you just barely scratch the surface and you see that shit is full of holes.
Yeah.
And so they're not going to sell more, or do better, or like, because they're being honest, because they're not.
But you, but you would think they would be if they were,
if they were real, if they were real.
Yeah.
That just gives you more questions, right?
Way more.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the movies.
Oh, me too. They're very entertaining.
Here, I mean, we're the creators of our own universe.
Right.
We make our own luck, our own existence on this earth. Mm-hmm. And if the supernatural beings are what you choose to believe in, then kudos to you. You live that life and you make it part of your story. In the end, I kind of believe in ghosts, not really at all. But I believe that ghosts... we're the ones that we create them ourselves. Okay. Mm. The ghosts that haunt us, right? We are the makers of our own supernatural.
Oh, Jesus. And you're just way like too the Warrens,
we create our own stories. And although we may be believable, they are just that, stories. Mm. And that, Eric, is the tale of the Warrens.
Dude, you're such a wet blanket.
Yeah. Oh. I know, man. You know, here's the thing. If they're not, I think they're pretty used to me being a wet blanket at this point. Like, give me a belief and I'll question it.
Yeah.
Kind of a situation. Yeah. And I knew I was going to do that for these guys. But it was one of those things, too. You want to.
I want to believe.
And then the more you look at it and the more you look into it, it's kind of just P.T. and Barnum Bailey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all just...
smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, smoke and mirrors. And what do I need to say to make these people believe?
Competing conveyor belts.
Yeah. I told you guys at the beginning of this episode, like I said, we were going to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Dream crushers.
Oops, yeah. I did it again to your heart.
Okay, so that's the Warrens. What do we have to say?
I'm sad.
Don't be sad, okay? They have good movies. They're fun to watch. But, you know, trust no one, apparently.
Trust no ho.
Trust no ho.
Okay. I still want to live in that fantasy of them being legit because that sounds more exciting to me.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
You keep believing that, okay?
All right.
Keep believing it, E. It's gonna be okay.
All right.
No. It's probably not.
Well, at least we can enjoy the movies and we can be like them and pretend like everything's fine.
Hey.
Even if it isn't.
There's nothing wrong with imagination. And just go with it.
I have a feeling this video is gonna be a little rough. So
it's okay.
It's our first one. So
you don't like it?
We'll get used to it. Sorry. Or you won't, and it's fine.
And that's okay too.
Yeah.
Just continue to keep, you know, listen to us.
Or don't.
Or don't. It's a shit show. We get it.
All right. Well, that was another bubble booster. All right. So with that, sad.
Dude, I really wish you would have had Lorraine's shirt on for this. Maybe I should have worn Lorraine's shirt. You know, yeah. The big...
Oh, yeah, the big, like...
neck cuff thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a Doyle wrapped around
my
neck.
Beard.
Yeah. Hey, I didn't mean to be a bummer. It was just, you know, just one story after another.
It's fine.
Yeah. I was really hoping that Annabelle would be a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the difference between, like, you know, a true story and based on a true
story. Based on a true story, yeah.
You know, you can go fucking anywhere with that shit. Anyway, thanks for looking at our faces or listening to our voices.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for hanging out with us. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. If you did, leave us a 5-star review.
Only 5.
Only 5. And tell your friends about us.
Better.
Yeah, or else. Okay. If you're on YouTube, like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell. That way we can fucking let you know when we're on.
Yeah.
Cool.
Often.
All right, and on that note,
stay spooky.
Peace.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.